Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Ryan Dunn.
And I'm Steve Marks.
Great show today. We're going to be talking about the new features in the recently released Windows Azure SDK 1.3 and some of the enhancements, for instance, to the portal. So the demo today, or the feature that we'll be talking about, really around the portal enhancements and some of the new administrative capabilities that you'll find there.
I'm sorry, Ryan. I'm just having trouble focusing. I'm a little bit emotional this episode. This is a very sad episode, people.
That's why I'm laughing.
This is, with glee. Ryan is apparently very excited. This is going to be Ryan's last episode of Cloud Cover. Oh, we finally, his manager watched the show and saw the kind of shenanigans that Ryan does and just said, that's it, you're fired. So Ryan's going to be, there are actually guards waiting outside to escort Ryan off the premises.
After this show. Yeah.
No, that's not really true. But Ryan is going to be leaving us. Ryan, where are you going? What are you going to be doing next?
I have another opportunity. I could more fully explain it another time. I don't want to. I don't think it would be right to do it on the show.
Ryan's going to go. He's going to study with the Tibetan monks.
Yep. Well, actually,
reach,
I mean, the
enlightenment.
Part of the things I'm going to be doing is I've actually had a big interest in basket weaving.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the things that
I've seen
that
a lot of the baskets
that
you're
focused
weaving
on
in meetings and things
is underwater basket weaving.
Right.
So that is my new goal. My new
so
focus.
You have to get scuba certified first.
No, I am a scuba.
You're
I
already
actually can hold my breath for quite some time. Watch.
That's good. Okay, let's just take a moment and wait and see.
We'll see how that goes.
So anyway, so that means so that coupled with the fact that they're going to tear this room apart that we're standing in, I don't know what all they're doing, but there's a bunch of
there's renovations.
Renovation that's going to happen in the studio, and so we're going to make this the last Cloud Cover episode of this year,
at least.
So we're going to at least go through all of December and till whenever the renovation stuff is done, and then hopefully sometime during that time, I'm going to find somebody else who.
We're taking
poor replacement for Ryan.
And you actually can nominate yourself.
Yep.
We're hiring for this role. You need to be able to stand here.
Yep.
And basically,
and you can be from
anywhere
as long as you're willing to fly here once a week for an hour.
Prefer that you actually don't speak English.
Yeah.
So that would be
we want
cater
diversity
to our international audience.
Right. For diversity reasons, we'd like to have somebody who doesn't know anything about the cloud, who doesn't speak English, and who's very uncomfortable on camera.
That would be...
So
then you would fit right in with me.
If you mean that, right?
Okay.
All right, well, we should actually get to the show and maybe do this, but...
Here we go.
Let's talk about some news.
Yes, the news that this... there's lots of news. So we're only going to be able to cover a little bit. I want to point that out.
A lot of stuff has happened.
Lots and lots of stuff since PDC. So one of the big things that happened, though, is there has been a new release of the Windows Azure Training Kit, and the Training Kit now has the content for the new SDK 1.3, which is things like the VM role, the admin mode, advanced web and workers, Windows Azure Connect, formerly Project Sydney, et cetera, et cetera. And if you take a look out on the... we'll have a link here, but on MSDN, you'll see that we've actually put all these courses online now. So you can both get an offline experience, you can download it, you can also go ahead and go out and you can individually click in and experience these labs. For instance, here's the introduction, and you could go through the exercises and whatnot in an HTML format online.
So no longer do you have to wait 30 seconds to download it.
Well, yeah.
Instant gratification. No, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You can also deep link to these things and whatever, which means it's much easier to show somebody
exactly
the exact, like, I'll take a look at
this. Other than asking them
thing
to download a 176 megabyte package and find
it. Actually, it was
lab
pretty big. It was longer than 30 seconds to download, wasn't it?
Yeah, if you were, especially if you weren't in the U.S., it was probably
it was pretty bad. Yeah.
Pretty hefty.
So that's good.
So
this covers
has been
all
updated
the new stuff.
Yeah, and of course we'll continue to rev this, or my team will after I'm gone. We'll continue to rev this with new features.
Yep.
and updates as it may be. Next, Wade Wegner. We know Mr. Wade from the last show, right?
That's the only time he appeared on the show.
Time,
I don't remember anything else.
My eyeballs are still burning a little bit from when he showed us. Yikes. But Wade has been working on, obviously, some AppFabric stuff, and he's released an update to the BidNow sample. So BidNow was originally a Windows Azure-only
yep.
kind of sample, web worker, table storage. Wade got his hands in there, ripped it apart, pulled in the composition model, Service Bus, Windows Azure, you name it.
He just ripped it right open, would you say?
He clawed it right open and got in there. Added a little sprinkle of SQL Azure,
yep.
OData.
SQL Azure in there. There's reporting now, right?
Yeah, and he dropped a little Windows Phone 7 in there. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a.
So this is becoming sort of an Uber sample.
It is an Uber sample.
This is Dinner Now like, not just in name.
Yeah. This is Dinner Now esque.
That's pretty cool. So this has this, and caching is in there,
oh,
obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a bunch of stuff in here, and Wade is largely responsible for driving a lot of this. So, good stuff from Wade. While we're talking about Wade, he also released another blog post, which I think is very interesting, because I've heard this question come up quite a few times, which is, how do I use SAML with ACS? And I'm specifically talking about ACS V1 here, which is the one that's in production today. We've always said you can use SAML types, you can use this shared secret, essentially username and password. And a lot of folks just didn't know how to do the SAML.
I didn't know how.
Yeah. And,
I still don't know how, because I haven't actually read it.
So Wade does a very detailed walkthrough
yep.
of how to actually register as a listener that is the hosted service itself. It registers itself up on the Service Bus, and it does that registration using a SAML token instead of the hard-coded username and password. So he walks through very detailed steps of how to set and edit claims, how to go out to the portal and provision the right output claims and the things like that, and set up the relationship and the Fed metadata, all those things. And once it's all done, bam, you have a service that's essentially a federated service. Not federated, but it's using SAML authentication with the Service Bus. Okay.
Cool. This guy again?
This guy. We came out here because we wanted to point out that this person has actually written a book on something that's now 5 years old. But I got a lot of questions right away.
All your stuff's broken. The bottom line is,
I screwed up.
All of Ryan's stuff is just broken, and
exactly.
You've got to read this blog post to find out how to fix it.
Find out how to fix it. So I actually found this myself when I went to go demo at Tech Ed Germany. So I figured it out, and then I should have probably blogged about it earlier, but it wouldn't make sense until after 1.3 was released. But anyhow, it's pretty close to when we released this. The deal is, if you use the Windows Azure MMC or you use the commandlets, which I know a lot of folks do based on feedback, they are compiled against what is called the 1.0 version of the storage client. Not to be confused later when we get to the storage client, where they don't refer to it as 1.0, but 1.2. It's actually 1.0.
I beg your pardon?
So if you go by the versions...
This is actually, right, the version number
the
of the assembly.
The version of the assembly, it's 1.0. Yeah. What happened is we incremented in the 1.3 SDK the version of the assembly for storage client to 1.1. Now, the Windows Azure MMC, it compiled against the 1.0 assembly. So if you did a new install, you would actually have an issue where
the binding
would fail.
It's looking for version 1.0. That version's not on the machine.
Correct. And it's a problem as well with the commandlets.
Ryan's stuff is broken.
Ryan's stuff breaks. The commandlets in the new deployment commandlet only, because that's the only thing that actually uses a storage client. The new deployment has to upload the package. So what we have here is really two fixes. One of them might or might not work. One of them definitely does work. We talked about this because I haven't actually tried number one, but I think it would work. Tell me if it doesn't. If you copy a 1.2 SDK version 1.0 assembly locally to next to the MMC, it should actually work. The other, I think it does that first before it parses the GAC, but we're not completely sure. I think we kind of went back and forth.
Right, the question is, right, if you have something in the bin folder that's the version you were looking for, I think, here's my guess, that if they have different version numbers, that will actually work fine, because it's not like the GAC one will sort of override what's in the bin folder, because they're two different versions. It won't find it in the GAC.
Right.
It will find it in the bin folder. So
I think it'll work.
I'm willing to bet money on it that it will actually work.
It should work, which is why you might not see this if you already have the MMC installed with 1.2 SDK.
Because right. it will copy it down, right?
Yeah. We already copied it in that folder, so if you uninstall it and then reinstall it, or install the 1.3, you might be fine.
You'd be okay,
if you had a virgin install and you didn't, you would have this problem. So the other is the assembly redirection, which is a nifty little feature that you can do. It's pretty easy to do. I have the directions here. Essentially create a config file, put in some settings, drop it in the directory next to the exe, and it will work.
It'll just magically work.
Okay.
Great. So speaking of all this 1.3 stuff, I like that we put this late in the... We talked about the new platform training kit that corresponds to this. We talked about how all your stuff broke because of this release. But now we're going to actually talk about the fact that Windows Azure SDK 1.3 shipped, as did the new Windows Azure Platform Management Portal. What's it, what's it called? Windows Azure Management Portal, they said. No platform.
No portal? Why not just portal? Windows Azure Portal.
It's a management portal.
Okay.
I don't know. There might be other sorts of portals. Anyway... There's a new portal. It's all Silverlight-y, and that's cool. We'll see some more of that as we get to our feature. Ryan's going to do some demos around that stuff. And there's a new SDK out that basically lights up a bunch of the features that we talked about at PDC. So some of these things are still beta slash CTP things, and some are fully released things. So we talked about startup tasks, and you know that was how we ran classic ASP, and that we elevated startup tasks. Well, that's shipped now. You can take SDK 1.3. You can follow along with what we did in that show, and it should work. What else is in there? There's full IIS. I guess that's part of actually what we showed in that show. Remote desktop, which we're going to show today, so we don't have to say anything more about that. Windows Server 2008 R2, well, that kind of says it all. Multiple admins in the portal, I guess we could probably demo that briefly, but it's sort of what it says. I don't know. What else is in there? Then there's the stuff that's in beta, right? Virtual machine role, extra small instances, Windows Azure Connect, formerly known as Sydney. Those are all in sort of beta or CTP form now, which means you need to go to the portal and click on beta programs, even for the CTP, it should really be beta slash CTP program. Click on beta programs and it'll say, here's what's available. You check little boxes that say, yes, I would like those. And it says, okay, you're pending. And we are going to get to those sort of first come, first serve. We're going to, depending on how all those features are doing and some metrics that we're going to look at, I don't know how quickly we're going to go through that list, but we'll just sort of add people as they, as we can. So I don't know how long to expect it to be, but go ahead and go. If you're interested in that stuff and plan on actually using it, go check those boxes.
And I do want to point out that neither Steve nor I actually can accelerate that process for you.
That is
a very common question. Can I get that, Ryan? Can you personally help me out, Steve?
I can do it, but
unfortunately, I can't. It costs money. I found that the guy who actually does this, he requires $25 to do the registration.
So send your checks in. And then
I'll do it for $50.
So. We'll take a look. But anyway, so all that stuff actually shipped, and so you can go get that now. There was a webcast that Ryan did with James Conard this morning.
Should be available
this morning,
recorded.
When we record this. So so by the time this comes out, I think the recording is going to be available.
Should
somewhere,
be available.
Right? So you can probably go track that down. That was a nice sort of demo of kind of some of the new stuff and a nice overview. So that's another way to learn about this stuff. But go download the new SDK.
Yep,
and get that.
And with the SDK, there were some changes, and I wanted to point this out. We're not going to have time to go through all of these because it is a little lengthy, but the storage client library did introduce some changes. There are some big ones. Most of them are actually enhancements. There's a few breaking changes, depending on how you did it.
Most of them are, frankly, bug fixes, but in a way that may be a breaking change. I mean, if you were relying on the way that, you know, that this didn't actually throw the right kind of exception or something like that, now you'll be surprised in your code. So it's worth, I would read this whole thing. We're not going to go through the whole thing. But I really would, if you're working with a storage client library, just go point by point and make sure you get those things. A lot of them are just stuff that didn't work before now works or something.
Yeah.
But some of them, they've been nice about.
This one is one I'm pretty sure that I'm the one that caused that one.
Great.
Because the very first version of the client, I complained about the fact that it had to be over 32 megabytes before it broke it into blocks and started using it. And we found for clients that were remotely, they couldn't get the block size up in time and you know this kind of thing. So anyhow, now this is cool. You can actually set the size. So now you can say, I want to do a 4 megabyte file in blocks now, and you can still do that. Very cool.
Great. All this stuff is good. I didn't see anything in here that I think anyone would be unhappy about.
No.
But if you have code that relied on the way it used to work, you should just double check. The kind of breaking changes are things like a different kind of exception is thrown, or this thing really never worked, but now it actually fails immediately or something, you know, things like that. So make sure you check those out just in case your code was sort of on the fringe of those things. But otherwise, it's all good stuff, and it's pretty exciting to see that there's been significant work.
Now, this is
there.
And it's 11 pages worth of goodness.
That might seem like a lot.
Now, we have another post here. This is we missed this one only because we were at TechEd.
I was
at TechEd.
I was just sitting around,
and Steve was crocheting something.
Yeah.
And
I always crochet Ryan something when he goes out of town. It's just a tradition we've got.
It's touching.
So he knows I'm thinking about him.
And how to get the most out of Windows Azure Tables. And, I'd like to say, first of all, this is a new record for the storage
team. This was an important, I don't know how we didn't cover this.
I don't know how we missed it.
Extremely exciting news for the storage team.
This post is a little lengthy. To give you an idea, we actually took a screenshot of the post. And let's go ahead and
zoom out.
And that is the post, folks.
That's
I don't
what
know
it
if
looks
you can
like.
Actually see that on the screen because I can't see it.
I like to see the whole thing at once just so I know where I am.
Just kind of take a look at it real quick here. I'd like to know what this little
That diagram looks interesting.
Yeah, this diagram looks great. Let's zoom into that.
So I recommend this as the way to view all of the storage team's blog posts, just to make a deep zoom image of it.
46?
42.
42.
On my laptop at full resolution, and it's actually not an extremely high resolution laptop, but at full resolution on my laptop, I paged down through 42 screenfuls
to get this
of information.
And
here.
That is just impressive.
So calling it a blog post may be a little misleading. It's more like a paper about...
It's a short novella.
But if we say anything about the content of it at all, or just,
it's awesome content.
Because that's the thing. I do want to make sure people realize we're making fun of the length. It's actually every one of those 42 pages has some really interesting stuff about how to get the best performance and the best scalability out of tables. And so it is
tremendous. But
stuff.
You need to set
and
aside
pretty graphs. We all know that I like the pretty graphs.
You need to set aside a weekend to consume it.
Yeah.
However,
I don't recommend printing it out. That
is
not eco-friendly.
No, definitely not.
But deep zoom image.
So really take a look. It's still out on the page. We could try to scroll through this, but it would take the rest of the show. Okay, let's get to the feature.
Let's talk about the feature.
So I'm logged into the new portal.
Yay!
How awesome is that? It's a Silverlight, Silverlight goodness. Really, the big features that we look at here are things like being able to look across all of your hosted services at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have these expanded, but by default they are expanded. You would see the health of the instances, so things start to show up in red when they're unhealthy. You can also go and just check the deployment health, and you'll notice here.
I like this screen.
I'm getting a warning because I have a deployment with one role instance deployed, which does not meet the minimum of two in order to enforce the SLA. So it's letting me know that. If you see if your instances were stuck or initializing or busy or suspended, you would see that actually show up here as well.
Yeah, this is a nice. This is the. If you just view this and everything's green, you get to just move on away, and you don't have to write and anything here
and
that's not perfectly healthy.
You can click that, and it'll zoom right into the service that was violating that, which is this bad boy right here. Now, a lot of things to show on this portal and worth mentioning. So we have in here now where these are where the management certificates go. So this is what, if you're going to manage your service using like the MMC or the commandlets or the management API at all, you're going to go ahead.
Of course, all those things Ryan broke. So yeah.
I broke, except for the API. You're going to need a certificate. This is where it's uploaded.
Right.
Hosted services, of course, is your view of your services. You'll notice that it's broken out by role, and as you click on these things, you'll have different interactions. So if you click on certificates, you would have add certificates, of course. If you click at the monitor level, the hosted service level, you're going to see DNS prefixes. You'll see where it's located in the region. You see this all over in the properties pane. One nice feature to point out is you can now copy all these properties as a tab delimited file. So if somebody has an issue and they're like, what are the configuration settings for that? You can just click
that. To provide to support or something.
Exactly.
Be careful because sometimes some of the things over there are private things or things like storage keys or whatever. So be careful. Don't blindly copy and sort of share that. Make sure that you've looked at what's in there. But but very handy to sort of get everything at once rather than having to copy these all down.
Exactly. When you click into the individual instances, you'll see, into the deployments, you'll see things like the VIP address, what ports and endpoints you have open, which is a pretty cool thing, right? In the past, you haven't had really visibility unless you knew what the service model was and you looked looked at it offline. Here I can see that I actually have port 80 open to my web role, and I have port 3389 open to my VM role. And you'll notice that these are both public endpoints, right? But I don't have, for instance, both 3389 open on both of them.
Right.
And that will become apparent why I'm pointing that out a little bit later. But only the VM role has port 3389 open. Okay. Now, if you look in here as well, you'll see these OS settings, or the settings that you would normally associate if you looked under your service configuration. So all of those are in here. It doesn't look real nice in this view because my screen's a little small, it looks like, but yep. You can zip it out a little bit and, again, copy it. But the different operations you have, you'll see light up at the top. So if I want a new staging deployment, or if I want to upgrade this or set configuration, configure the OS, which is switch between R2 or 2008 mm-hmm. and choose which version of that yep. OS guest system, you can do that all here. You choose automatic upgrades. 2008 SP2 you can see is the current family. And if you click into the web roles themselves, or the roles, the instances, you'll see other operations. So in this case, you see reboot, reimage. Reboot is just like it sounds. You reboot the machine. That's like a hard reboot. Mm-hmm. And then reimage is interesting. Reimage, I think, is probably more applicable to VM roles yeah. than to web and worker roles. Assuming you haven't gone into a web or worker role like I did and accidentally turned on the firewall fully, which will then cut you off from RDP access completely.
So the only way to actually get unwedged there is to reimage.
Is to reimage yeah. the machine.
There are other times, I think, yeah. in a web or worker role where reimage might make sense, especially if you've done some elevated startup tasks or something in that
yeah.
in that web. If you've actually changed things about if you've changed registry keys and whatever, a reboot isn't going to undo all that yeah. stuff, while a reimage will actually get you
It pulls that golden image down, which is either the one you uploaded or it's our base guest OS image.
Right.
And drops it in there and then restarts the whole thing. So reboot, again, if you just get kind of wedged a little bit and a normal recycle would do it for you, use that. Reimage, go ahead, bring off the sledgehammer and knock it back into its place.
Right.
The other big one that a lot of folks were excited about, well, before we go on, let's look at the storage accounts. You can see here now, kind of at a view, and I like how we have the key access here is now hidden by default. You could actually click view, but it doesn't show the whole thing, which is kind of cool. Because now
I was excited. I was about to write down that. I was going to take a little picture.
You can now copy it to the clipboard. So it'll show the first few digits, which isn't enough to anything, but if you hit copy to clipboard, then you have it, which is kind of cool. And then if you look under user management, this is a great feature that a lot of folks ask for, tons and tons and tons of folks, and that is the ability to add co-administrators.
I think you should just go ahead and add me.
Yeah.
No. I don't see any downside to just giving me...
Well, as long as you're sitting here right next to me, I can monitor what you're doing. But yeah, you would add another live ID to this. It's pretty simple to do. You click that big button. You type in that name and you choose which subscription, click OK, and that person is now able to log into the portal. They will see your subscription and be able yep. to be a full admin there.
And they can do everything you can do, everything you can do as a service administrator, which is
everything.
Sort of everything here on the Windows Azure side, at least. So
yes.
they can go create services and storage accounts and delete them and
monitor,
whatever.
Anything you want.
And so you do want to be careful. I mean, you're really giving somebody all the same access pretty much that you have in the portal. You're not giving any of the billing stuff, because I think we've covered that before yeah. on other episodes of here, where we talked about switching who the service administrator is, and that's different from the account owner, which is sort of the billing relationship. So this does nothing about billing, so no one else is going to see the bills or be able to change the credit card that's in there or anything like that. But it gives people pretty much everything over the Windows Azure set of yep. functionality that you see in the portal. So that's great, but it's a powerful
feature.
Be aware of what you're doing yeah. when you add. That's why we call them, you know, co-admins. They're an admin just as you are. Down the road, we're going to look at, you know, well, could I give somebody some subset of permission? Could I give somebody read-only access or things like that?
Exactly.
But right now, the only thing you can do is give someone full admin access.
Right. The other bits in here we'll probably have to save for another episode, but you have now we have a, I would, lack of a better term, a locker for your VHDs. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you're going to be charged for the space, but it's a special account. It's a special storage account that is that is set up for you. It's kind of implicit in your subscription. So when you use the tooling that we provide, which is the CS Upload tool, we can cover that in a later show, or Steve will actually. If you look at my overview that I did this morning, there is a CS Upload tool, and what that tool does is it grabs the location of a special storage account that's provisioned for you automatically when you have the VM role behavior enabled on your subscription. And you will be uploading it to that location. So this is it is a storage account, but it's not a storage account that you would directly manipulate yourself. So you can think of it like that. And that is really what this is, this VM images bucket here.
I want to point something out because I wanted to make sure that we mention this. There's a link at the very bottom of this page in the middle.
Yes. Take me back to the old portal,
which I hope no one really wants to click on or feels the need to click on, but I just wanted to point it out that it is there so that if you are having some sort of trouble with the new portal for whatever reason, it is brand new, it's still sort of being worked on. You know, if you're having any sort of trouble or there's something you just don't know how to do it in the new portal and you know how to do it in the old one, don't freak out too much. You can always click that as sort of an emergency ripcord that will get you back to the old portal. That'll work for, I think, the next like month or so. I think we've said early next calendar year we're going to turn off the old portal. I don't remember exactly what we said, but that's about the... Yeah. You should expect this to keep working for the next month or so, but once we're confident that everybody's okay with the new portal and ready to go, we will turn the old one off. But for now, that link is there.
And I didn't show it because I'm not sure if it's managed with cookies or not, but the first time you log into the portal, it's actually going to prompt you for a choice.
Yeah.
It'll say, or the first time you log in after the Silverlight portal's been deployed, which most people will probably have done by now who've used Windows Azure, it'll say, hey, do you want to try we've changed, would you like to try the new one? No.
Yep.
Put me back to the old
right.
one. This is your escape back to the old one. Now, other features we won't be able to cover, but you can see we have integration now with SQL Azure. If you click database, reporting integration will come, the service bus will come, and virtual network is where you would go to manage Windows Azure Connect.
And that won't work if you haven't gotten into the beta.
Correct.
Remember that both VMroll stuff and the Windows Azure Connect stuff, those won't actually light up and work in the portal until you've actually made it into that.
Yeah, I had to pay $25, but my account has been activated.
Right. Mine actually hasn't been activated. This is honest truth. I can't do this yet in the new portal. So
there you go. Okay, so let's talk about the remote desktop feature. It's cool for a lot of people, and the reason it's cool is because it's a great debugging or troubleshooting. What we want to be clear on is the use cases where you would use this and what you should do with it and what you shouldn't do. So what I've done here, I'm just back out again. I've selected the instance of the web role, and you remember I said earlier, port 3389 on this is not open, publicly at least. So I'm clicking connect on this, and you're going to say to yourself, wow, how is this done? But I have a password, and just like normal remote desktop, it goes, secures the connection. In this case, it's going to prompt me because, you know, how are you sure you want to trust this connection? Yeah, go ahead. Log in. Yeah, go ahead.
Ryan's
just always
trusting.
Click OK. Don't worry about
whatever
it.
Whatever it asks you, just don't read it.
If you see a UAC prompt that says, would you like to install this Trojan, go ahead, click OK.
Yeah. If there's no OK, click accept or yes. Just one of those. It's usually the left button that you want to click to just go ahead and do anything.
So here I am. I am in a web role actually running in Windows Azure. Very cool.
This is what you're using as your desktop now, right?
Yes, exactly. So you can go in and you can do like all the things you would think you should be able to do. Like you could go to the INET manager. You can open this up and you can actually see how things are mapped between your service definition and how it gets mapped into full IIS. Further, you can bring up the service manager here, our server manager. You can go in and you can look at event logs. So, if you look under, I think it's under diagnostics, you look into the event viewer. So as your application's running, okay, now you're gonna have some issues come up, or you're gonna have some behavior you might not be expected. Whatever it is, maybe it's a bottleneck in the system. There's lots of ways to debug. There's ways outside of the role with using trace listeners and their diagnostics capabilities to get a view into it. Or you can actually get onto the machine and very quickly look in and say, oh, look, I have an error in my event log. What is that? Let's go ahead and take a look at it. Or if you're great way to debug startup tasks, great way, by the way, is go ahead, have that startup task write to a temp file anywhere on the drive. remote desktop into the machine, go look at that file. And then you have that ability to just get on the machine, look at the file real quick. You don't have to do any sort of diagnostic monitor configuration or round tripping to storage or anything. You just get on the machine and take a look. So here we are, we're on the machine. All the things that you would expect here, since we're using full IIS now, are here. So you have things like the role. If you look, it's great how these things actually map out. If you look at the service definition, you'll find that the instance or the role name of this is WebRole 1.
Right.
And you'll also find that the site name defined in my service definition is web. And so if you look at this nomenclature here, this says that in WebRole 1, which is my role name, the instance underscore zero, which is the first instance, in the web site, the one that's named web, this is the application that was created for it. Further, you can go in and check the application pools, and you can see here's a funky named one with one. We know this is it because here on screen, we see that there's one application in it. You can see how it's been, you know, we're using Framework 4, it's integrated pipeline, we're starting immediately. You can check all these things and you can see how things have been set up. So it's a very powerful feature just to get you on the box, look at it.
And if something's set up wrong here, I could just go click and change it, right?
Exactly, that's where we're going with this. So if you think
this is...
Isn't
that a brilliant setup? It was infomercial-like.
Yeah, if you... Here's what, you know what works really good too, is if you copy-paste a file locally, you can just drop it. You can copy it.
That's
true. You can paste it right here.
You could just edit, you could change some code, copy over a new DLL or a new web page.
Copy over a new DLL, just drop it right in here.
And it would instantly work. You could go refresh in the browser, you would see the change that you made.
And then at some point, we would detect that your role is unhealthy, or we would do a rolling upgrade perhaps, or we might lose some hardware and decide to move you, whatever it is, and we will heal you.
Yep.
We will heal you right back to where you were before you did anything in RDP.
Exactly.
So this is the part where we want to be stress this. Do not make any changes that you want to stay forever through RDP. Bad idea.
Right.
You need, if you want this to be repeatable, we've talked about item potency many times with the startup task. If it's a web worker role, use a startup task to make the change. If you've got to tweak a registry key, you can go in and test it real quick, right, through RDP, but then you need to go write that startup test that actually makes that permanent, makes it repeatable. Otherwise, you're just going to lose it, and then you're going to call up support and say, what happened? And we're going to say, well, you were unhealthy. We healed you. We healed you back to where you were when you deployed.
And the tough part, the reason why people get this wrong sometimes is that the changes you make will persist for a while, right? I mean, like, it will seem that what you did was fine because the website will work or whatever it is that you're doing. Because until that time comes when we need to go re-image or move you to a different machine or something like that, it'll stay there. We don't aggressively go change any of that stuff. So it'll bite you when you least expect it. It'll be the next week or something that things will change. So you just really want to be careful about that. And if you're not sure, if you RDP into something to just try some quick fix and whatever, and then you've gone and written code to do it or whatever, you can re-image the machine and make sure that you will undo that. That's a good way to make sure that whatever you did with RDP, you backed back out or something like that, is to just go hit that re-image button and make sure that you're back to a clean state. Whatever it looks like right after re-image, that's what it'll look like right after we do, you know, we do service healing or something, right? So that's a good way to make sure that things are still in working order. But this is, I know this is going to be hard for some people to get because it seems really tempting to connect.
And you can copy paste files up here. It's easy to do stuff, and you're like, oh. Now, I made a big deal about the port 3389 not being open to this role on the VIP.
How did we connect?
It's magic.
There was only port 80. Did we somehow go through the website?
We tunneled through port 80.
There's actually a backdoor that's been built in there. Every version of Windows it lets you just, as long as port 80 is open, you can remote desktop.
So let's cover how that actually worked. If we look at the service definition for this particular service, I want to point out a couple things. Let's take a look here in my Solution Explorer. Oh, look, I need to open it first. So let's open this. This is what I actually deployed, and here's the service definition. Let's bump that up a little bit, 150% or so. Now, I have a VM role deployed, And I've used what we've called the role plugin import. So the way that Remote Desktop is implemented as a role plugin. These are extensions to the service model provided by Microsoft, typically, that are going to essentially cut and paste service definition and service configuration into a larger full model. So what happens, you can think, a simplified way of thinking of this is, at runtime, when you upload this, it gets parsed and all the pieces that are in the role plugins get injected in the spots where you see the imports, and then you have this much larger definition. But because you don't need to know intrinsically what all the things the remote access or remote forwarder plugins are doing, we don't want you to have to incorporate that directly into your service definition, so we're going to hold it outside in an external file and piece it together later. So that's the way this works. Now, what you see here is every role that needs remote access, it's going to use this remote access. So if the VM role has it enabled, and you'll also see that this is my site name. Again, remember I said it was web role 1, and here's the site name called web. If you look down here, you'll see, again, I have remote access. Now, the difference is that one of the roles has something called a remote forwarder on it, and one of them doesn't. So within a deployment, you're going to have one role, one and only one role, that has a remote forwarder. And what this does is it's a TCP socket listener. It is the one that hovers over that port 3389. And you saw, remember, on the portal, I said, hey, look, there's 3389 open on my VM role and only on my VM role. The VM role sits there, monitors that, in this case, because it's running the remote forwarder. This remote forwarder has a socket listener. It looks in and it says, who is this connection being sent to? And then it will forward to the appropriate instance behind the scenes. So internally,
over an internal endpoint.
Right. Internally, we do have port 3389 open on the instances. However, we do not have it publicly exposed, in this case in the web role, only internally.
Right. So your web role has an internal endpoint for those remote desktop connections. Mm-hmm. The way that you actually get to it is you go through the forwarder.
Correct.
Right? The remote forwarder, which is actually on it.
On a completely different VM role.
But I mean, it doesn't matter. You have to pick one of the roles to act as a forwarder.
And this couldn't.
The forwarder then routes internally. Yeah. And the forwarder might just route to itself on the. I mean, it might be that you're trying to connect to that very instance. It doesn't matter. The point is, you always go through one hop to the forwarder and then an internal hop to whichever instance it is you're trying to talk to.
Exactly. And I really want to stress that the remote forwarder does not have to be on a VM role. It just happens to be that I chose a VM role here because for other reasons. This could be a web role, it could be a worker role. Could be any role type can run the remote forwarder.
Right. You just want to pick one.
It needs to be one. Now, one and only one. You would have a service model failure actually if you tried to add it more than once because you'd have port 3389 trying to be opened on two different endpoints. Okay. So that's kind of the important thing. Now, I think we should talk about. You know, this is the nuts and bolts of the feature. Let's get to our tip of the week.
Yeah, I think it's about time. And Bob, this week for the tip of the week introduction, we've got to send Ryan off in style, I think. So I think we should have, you know, one of those sappy montages so that we can all have a moment to just let it sink in that Ryan is leaving us. So Bob, for this tip of the week, let's have a Ryan send-off. And here it is, your tip of the week. Okay, I'm sure that was sad. You should be crying now. We didn't just see
it.
But
beautiful.
People who are watching this from home are probably in tears.
I'll probably be in tears laughing later.
I'm eager to see what Bob is able to put together for us for that. Let's talk about that tip of the week.
Let's talk about the tip of the week. And there's a couple pieces to this. So, I'm going to not go here. I'm going to go back to the portal. And on the portal, when I went and clicked that connect, I don't like to make it always do, you know, just accept the type. I always like to be prompted open save. And the reason being is I can actually save this RDP file.
Right.
And when I save that to the desktop, which is now not visible, but that's okay. We'll bring up Explorer. I have an RDP connection here. This RDP connection, if I go ahead and open this with Notepad, you're going to see something interesting in here, which is, let's bump up the font again. You'll see, first of all, two settings. You'll see the one that says, here's the name of the address. In this case, it's monitorme.cloudapp.net. But the important one is this load balance info cookie. And you'll see that it's very finicky on the formatting here, folks. So I would recommend getting it from the portal as opposed to crafting it by hand. But you'll see it, there's this hash that says, look, this is actually what it says. It says, we were targeting the role called WebRoll 1. Please grab the instance called WebRoll Instance 1 and use the fire the forwarder to the internal port called Windows Azure Plugins Remote Access .RDP. And that is actually the format, and it's very specific. You need, so you get it from the portal. The reason I point this out is twofold. One, you can save this cookie, you can save this RDP file, and then you don't have to have the portal. You can just double-click it,
right,
and it launches. And two, here's the bigger tip, which is occasionally you're going to get into a situation where, let's say, one of your role instances is busy. And just try to simulate that. I don't know. I don't have anything in here that I can do. Maybe I can get on the box directly and reboot it. Let's do that.
Couldn't you have just hit the reboot button? Wouldn't that also?
Yeah, let's see how long it'll take here. I'm on the actual instance. I'm going to hit restart. Don't do this, by the way. You're going to be unhappy with your SLAs if you do this. So I just hit restart. And now after some point in time, this WebRoll instance will actually, you'll see the portal respond after 30 seconds or so and say, hey, it's offline. Let's try to reboot it.
Yeah, we didn't point this out, but this new portal is all asynchronous. That's why it's so snappy. That's why you can just sort of click around and it's instantaneous, is because it's always pulling down sort of all the information and caching it locally. So you will see that the change takes till sort of the next time that it actually reaches back to the portal service.
There's a timeout it's got to get to, and then it has to detect that it's actually being rebooted. But you will see it here. Now, the reason I'm talking about this like this is because even the reboot's probably a bad example, but there's a case where your web role is responding, maybe the role entry point's not, it's hung, or something's, right, or something is a busy state, you have a startup test that's hung,
right.
It's actually blocked on a UI.
Yeah,
it's waiting for you
to
start.
I guarantee that the number one reason is going to be you ran some MSI startup and it popped up a dialog box.
And so, unfortunately, what happens, and we'll give it a second here. Okay, and here it's actually gone busy, as you can see. It took a few moments, but once it's gone busy, you'll notice that the problem here is that connect button is no longer lit up.
Right.
Now, it can be the case, this is a kind of like a bad example because reboot, you know, it really isn't available.
Yeah,
but you could get into a state where the role says it's busy or it's
right,
whatever it is,
hung or it's cycling or whatever.
It's stuck on busy, maybe.
You might have trouble here because it won't let you connect in, because basically that light only lights up when you get to the ready state.
Exactly.
And you might want to, that might be exactly when you want to connect in and see what's going on. And that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do if the machine is actually up. Then you can totally connect in, and what I mean, that's fine to do. We don't have a good way in the portal right now to tell for sure, and so it just takes the conservative route. It basically says, look, unless you're ready, we don't light up that button.
Right, but if you've saved this locally, this file, you don't need to then use the portal. You can actually go ahead and just double-click this file, and you'll still be able to get in, because we have this feature, I think it's called no probing. I don't know what the final word of it was.
Yeah,
but essentially or maybe it was lingering, I forget. But anyhow, the point is that we will even though you're busy and you're technically off the load balancer, will allow certain connections through specifically RDP. And that's especially the case like if you're running a VM role instance and you take yourself off the load balancer purposefully because right. you're doing some maintenance or you're doing something like that and you want yourself off the load balancer, there's really no way to do that and then go do anything on the machine, inspect right. anything on the machine if yeah. we also turn off your
remote
RDP connection.
You mark yourself as busy and then you get booted out of the remote desktop.
So that's why this works.
Right, port will stay, so the load balancer will keep routing your RDP traffic through here even yeah. though you're not in a ready state. While if this same instance had port 80 open for web or whatever, yeah. that would actually be off the load balancer.
Correct.
Because that's what you want. When you're not in a ready state, you don't want to be getting traffic.
That's right.
Right. Okay. So that's a workaround.
And it's back. It's rebooted.
A reboot doesn't take that long, I guess. That's the tip is if you need to work around kind of not being able to RDP in, you know, when you're in a busy state or something.
But you really think you should be able to RDP.
Save that RDP yeah. file. Right. Now, if you're actually if the machine is actually offline, like during a reboot, it would probably actually be off, right?
Right.
Then you won't be able to RDP in because the machine's actually not there and listening. But
right.
if this is just a matter of like some dialog box popped up during your installer and your startup task or something like that, and it you can use this method to sort of get in there anyway.
Right.
Pretty cool. And so I guess that one sort of, not exactly the main tip, but one tip here is that once you've got remote desktop set up and whatever and you try it out the first time, just go ahead and save one of those files. Save the RDP file while you're there.
Yeah.
Because you won't be able to...
You can edit it later.
You won't be able to do it. When you get to the state, you won't have a button to click on, so you won't actually be able to get that RDP file. And constructing it by hand means you have to get all the spaces exactly right and whatever, yeah. which is kind of tough. So save it. As soon as you have something working like that, go ahead and save an RDP file and just keep it around in case of an emergency.
Right, and it's very space sensitive, so make sure you don't have trailing spaces. Make sure you spell the roles exactly the same.
Yep.
Case sensitive, all sorts of goodness there. So if you're going to handcraft it, which yep. I recommend you don't,
or even if you're going to change it, I mean, I sort of would
yeah,
think keep an RDP
save
file,
this
change
one.
The number of the instance count.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
that that's fine.
Work.
Just make sure you really just do the one character change you meant, and you don't put a new line or a space or something yeah. somewhere, because it really does have to follow the right format.
Okay.
Great.
With that,
this is this is farewell to Ryan. Not really farewell to Ryan, but farewell to Ryan on the show.
Hopefully I can come on in a cameo at some point in time.
We should have you as a guest to show us the basket weaving that
yeah.
you're working on. But as always, if you want to interact with the show, if you'd like to apply for the job of the non-English speaking, if you don't speak English, so you don't understand what I'm saying, you can send us a message on Twitter to @CloudCoverShow.
Make sure it's not in English, please.
But yes, certainly not in English. I speak a little bit of Spanish and Russian, believe it or not. So try one of those languages. They're the most likely for me to understand.
Try pig Russian.
Anyway, but no matter what, we're going to actually make this the last show of this calendar year, and maybe, I don't know exactly when we're going to start up again
yep.
in January, or if we're going to start up again for sure in January, but I'm going to try to find someone else to do this show with. So we'll probably be back in January. Just follow @CloudCoverShow or just watch Channel 9 and we'll let you know what's going on. But until then, thanks. Bye.
Thank you.